Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you today, coming to you from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Bill Jack from Worldview Academy also in studio with us today. And today we're going to look at Game of Thrones. It just ended. The finale ended, what, a week ago? That was the 8th season, and it was by far the most popular television program of the last 10 years. 19.3 million people watched the finale, but that does not include the pirates. Some of the episodes registered something like 55 million pirates. It was the most pirated TV program in history. This HBO-produced Game of Thrones.
We're speaking pirate today.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pirated.
Pirated.
Pirated on the high seas of the internet. Well, Game of Thrones... World Magazine explained why people like the fantasy, and here's the explanation World Magazine gave to it. Enchanted stories of magical worlds can soothe hearts and minds weary from the bitter disappointment of life's unfixable problems like disease, violence, and suffering. And in the end, the Game of Thrones produced more violence and suffering than probably any other major television program to date. But fantasy does disconnect us from the world's problems, but friends, of course, we don't want to be disconnected from God's solution to the problem. And sadly, these TV programs don't always produce a solution, a salvation, a redemption. Fantasy is one way to cope. That is, to abandon reality itself is one way to cope. But in the end, we as Christians, we come back to the solution, to the resurrection, to the fact that, yes, the problem was more severe than we thought it was, but so is the solution. The solution was more severe in the sacrifice of God's only begotten Son on the cross. And Bill, I think that's the solution that we need to keep bringing back to the modern world that is really taken by fantasy. Think about the most recent segment of Marvel movies that have been produced, still moving off the highway of reality towards fantasy. And fantasy pretty much dominating the box office as well.
Yep. I saw that last Marvel edition, and it was, two or three weeks into the run, and the theater wasn't packed, but at the end, people applauded. And I'm going, really? Mm-hmm. That's what they do? They applaud a fantasy series that has no bearing upon reality? And it reminded me that what you just said, and that is we want to escape reality because life is hard and we want solutions and we want to find that good wins and evil as it perishes and that there's a conclusion to everything. And so we're looking for heroes. We're looking for escape from the hardness of life.
Yeah. It looks like Avengers Endgame has hit number 2 in the all-time domestic box office score, and it is almost number 1, Bill. It's within, I'm going to say, about $100 million of being number 1, edging out Avatar, which has held that place for 10 years. So it does appear that Avengers Endgame will be the number 1 most popular movie in the world. And we gave something of a review of that a couple of weeks ago, so we're not going back there. But let's get back to the Game of Thrones. And friends, the solution again is to come back to God's redemption and to realize that it is Jesus who is risen from the dead. And to escape reality is not our solution to the problem. You know, the end of the fantasy always tends to be disappointing. The Rotten Tomatoes score went from something like 95% down to 40% in the 8th season of Game of Thrones. It was a cruel disappointment. In fact, there's a crowdfunding source right now that's trying to get a new season 8 to replace the season 8 that just ended. So, you know, they're not happy. I think it's like 1.5 million people have registered their concern or the complaints about season 8 for Game of Thrones. But in this fantasy where the heroes get killed off constantly and the story doesn't really go anywhere, I think they've demonstrated the futility of fantasy probably better than any other series. Although there have been other series that demonstrate something of the futility of these fantasies.
Right, right. And they always leave you empty.
Yeah.
You know, the TV series about a half a dozen years ago called Lost had such potential because there were characters in a crashed airliner on a desert island.
Yeah.
And each of the characters had a unique story, and there was a lot of philosophy in there. One of the characters was named John Locke. And so there was a lot of philosophy in there, a lot of deep thinking went into the script. But by the final season, it too had tanked to the point where it had such potential, and you were thinking, this could end with a biblical worldview. Mm-hmm. And if it does, it will revolutionize television.
Yeah.
And yet they towed the party line, and they went for the reincarnation ending.
Yeah.
And so Lost went east, and right. It was never found again.
Yeah. Well, as a Christian worldview goes, you know, God must bring righteousness to bear. God must bring good to displace the evil. God must work all things out for good for those who love him. God must bring a total consummation of righteousness, peace, and goodness. And he does, because God is the very essence of goodness. So, friends, without God, we're just going to be in this endless cycle of death and evil, and that's going to just prevail. So we as Christians, we know that Jesus is risen from the dead, and we will rise from the dead as well. And that is the message of the gospel, and we proclaim the message loud and clear as the world continues to grapple with its self-consistent nihilistic worldview. Everybody was mad about the fact that the level of nihilism was a little too self-consistent by the end. Too many of the heroes turning into homicidal mental cases, and then they get killed off too. So none of that really encourages anybody by the end of the series, because I think at the end of the day, people really do want us to live happily ever after.
They want a hero.
Yeah.
They want somebody to whom they can look to and say, he has qualities that I admire. That's what makes somebody heroic, is qualities of selflessness, of courage, of self-sacrifice. And that's the problem with all fantasy characters. They all have one of those qualities. They each may have one of those qualities, but they cannot obtain all the qualities that we require in a hero. And they all have feet of clay.
Game of Thrones, one of the most raw, most nihilistic, most representative of the suicidal cultural bent of the day. And we're going to discuss it more in just a moment on the Generations Broadcast. Folks, under Obamacare, the average family health care premiums now have exceeded $18,000, and more premium increases averaging 25% are expected for next year in 39 states. And remember, over 1,000 Obamacare plans cover abortion, and that's most of them. 5 states offer no abortion-free plans at all. And you know that all Obamacare plans contain the contraceptive abort-efficient mandate. So what do Christians do? Well, I'll tell you what we have done. My family has gone with the Samaritan Medical Sharing Ministry since 1999. Over 17 years, we have shared our medical needs with brothers and sisters in Christ, and they have shared theirs with us. And the cost? Well, it's about 1/3 of what the average family pays under Obamacare. And Samaritan Ministries does not support the killing of unborn children. Our family has saved over $200,000 in insurance premiums over the last 17 years, and we have helped literally hundreds of Christian brothers and sisters with their medical needs. We write checks every month to different families who have needs to cover. How cool is that? On top of all of that, we can support the lives of unborn children while the powerful systems in Washington are doing just the opposite. I want to encourage you to check out Samaritan Ministries as an option for your family. Imagine healthcare sharing in a Christian way, protecting life as Christians do at 1/3 the cost. Just check it out at SamaritanMinistries.org and mention Kevin Swanson when you sign up, and we'll send you a free copy of my new book, Family Life. That's SamaritanMinistries.org. And we are back on the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson here, Bill Jack also in studio with us today. reviewing 8 seasons of Game of Thrones, perhaps the most raw, the most nihilistic, the most representative of a suicidal cultural bent of any television program in recent history, and certainly the worldwide leader in the zeitgeist. Probably no series had such explicit, most exquisite torture scenes or such violent rape scenes. It was a perverted, twisted sexual world, and Marquita Saad, I think, would have had a good time on the set. Marquita Saad lived in the 18th century. He was sort of a precursor to the modern world. This is Marquita Saad gone mainstream. Saad was consistently evil. He attempted that. He wanted to have a philosophy that was consistently against God. His basic premise was having abandoned Christianity, men should therefore logically abandon all law. How can there be any law over man? Is not man's will the only law? So Saad really set himself at war against God. He wrote, "The idea of God is the sole wrong for which I cannot forgive mankind." So he embraced what he called the death principle. He advocated birth control, abortion, and the destruction of marriage. Is that familiar? He also advocated homosexuality. Any of this familiar to you, Bill?
Yeah, I think he would be very at home in our society today.
Yeah. He believed in total existential isolation, the destruction of relationship. Again, Saad, "My neighbor means nothing to me. There is not the slightest relationship between him and myself." It was Marquita Saad and was the philosopher that was somewhat the beginning of the modern world. And in these films, I think you see an increasing commitment to the Marquita Saad worldview. Over the last 5 to 6 years, tons of these horror violence movies and television programs like Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead, Slasher, American Horror Story, Hannibal. I think every one of these have come out in just the last 6 or 7 years. There's been a literal explosion of these sort of horror slasher television series, and they're incredibly popular.
Right, right. And again, there's something about horror shows and terror shows that draw people because we love to be frightened, because it gives us a high and gives us an adrenaline rush. And so we can't get enough of it, so we go back for more. It's almost addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's the escape from reality.
Mm.
It is the idea that we can survive vicariously something that is horrendous.
Well, do you sit and watch a rape scene on Game of Thrones? Of course, that question has been debated on a number of Christian media websites over the last 8 years. And, you know, the verse that really ties in here is Ephesians 5, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them." When you see an explicit portrayal of evil by reenactment on the film, it highlights the evil. But in the end, it diminishes the force of the evil and often attracts the flesh to take in what the Bible calls fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. So, you know, you have Christians watching this stuff and they have a hard time rebuking the unfruitful works of darkness because they've had too much fun and fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness.
Yeah.
That's the thing you want to avoid. And that's the catch-22 here, Bill. You know, on the one hand, we don't want to say it's just malum and say it's a sin to watch these television programs. But if in the end you're incapable of rebuking the unfruitful works of darkness, reproving the unfruitful works of darkness because you've had so much fun having fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, then you have been taken in by the spell of it.
Right. And you know, the Bible details, you know, the horrible things like rape.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't delve into the graphic nature of it.
There's something about the visual presentation that seems to invite you into that fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. And, of course, there's something in the flesh. There's something in the sinful flesh of human beings where we're sort of
fascinated
by it. Yeah.
It's like the passing the car wreck or seeing in the train wreck. We're drawn to look even though we're horrified by it. There are films that do portray evil properly.
And carefully.
And carefully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking of a film that oftentimes is overlooked, and it's written by, I can't think of the author's name right now, just escaped me, but it's called Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Mm-hmm.
and it's a Disney film, so people think, oh, it's a family-friendly film. It is. It's often found in the horror section, which is strange, but the author also did the screenplay. So it's a he changed it, but it's a really interesting story about a carnival that comes to town in the fall, which is not when they normally come to town. And it's Mr. Dark's Pandemonium Circus. And they entice people with their own desires. And it's really a fascinating study into the nature of man.
Mm-hmm.
But the evil, you sense the evil, but it's not, you don't delve into the evil like you do in Game of Thrones or some of these others. And so it's a really good study. It would be something that, you know, I could even recommend and say that families with older children could sit down and analyze in a worldview perspective, because movies teach more powerfully than anything else, because you have, as you said, the visual, you have the dialogue, you have the music, you have all that appeals to your heart. And too often people check their brains at the ticket counter when they walk into the theater, and they don't think their way through a movie. They feel their way through a movie. That's why Avatar, that's why a lot of the fantasy shows are uncritically accepted by Christians and endorsed and even supported by Christians.
You know, friends, I think it's important for us to discern the times. And just the last 6 or 7 years, there has been a literal explosion in this masochistic, sadistic form of entertainment with Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, slasher American Horror Story, Hannibal, and so forth. This ain't the Cosby Show anymore. This is not Starsky and Hutch. This is not Lassie. You remember some of these programs, television programs from the 1960s or 70s or 80s or even 90s. You didn't see the mainstreaming of violence, where society was hardened towards gratuitous violence and this sort of reduction of any kind of common grace and common mercy. It's a stark, evil, harsh, sadistic world that is presented by these television programs. And it seems to me, Bill, that it's preparing this generation to the idea of the Nazi-like violence and torture and the elimination of hundreds of millions of people, similar to what happened out of Germany and Russia in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. In other words, you know, if you were to take a look at the kind of publications, the kind of movies that were produced by the Weimar Germany culture, you would see, I think, something similar to what is happening with the millennial generation and their infatuation with Marquis de Sade's sadism today.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There is a fascination with what happened during the Nazi reign, and we're drawn to it, but at the same time, we're repulsed by it.
Mm-hmm. I guess my point is, if you look at the first season of Game of Thrones, there's a death count, Statista.com on this, by the way. You go to Statista.com, they actually take a look at the body count of
no kidding.
Game of Thrones. Yeah, year by year, season by season. And it starts out at 59. So 59 people were killed, tortured to death in the most cruel and exquisite manner you could imagine in the first season. And on the second season, you know, you're up to 104. And then the third season, you're doing 247. And then the fourth season, you're up to 648. By the last...
Sounds like the tenure of Bill Clinton in office.
Pretty, well, could be, yeah. But by the last season, you're at 3,500. So
3,500.
The body count has increased from 59 to 3,500 inside of 8 seasons. And again, this isn't the sort of killing that that you might see in a far off sense. There are a fair number of
up close
of
and personal
explicit rapes and tortures and murders going on in this series of programs. And friends, you're probably wondering why we're going over it. Well, we're going over it because many of our friends are watching it. Okay, your church members are watching Game of Thrones, and there's a point at which, you know, I think we need to get a thermometer into the water and get a little sense of how hot the water is for the frogs that are sitting in this slowly boiling water, or roughly at 211.94 degrees Fahrenheit at this point, Bill.
Yeah,
You know, it's good to get the thermometer into the water and test the water. And friends, it does seem that the mainstreaming of violence over the last 7 or 8 years has characterized a television, especially with the Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead, and a few others. Well, here's one more point I want to make before we break on this program, Bill. Here's an article from TheRinger.com, and it's a long article relating to the zeitgeist presented by Game of Thrones over 8 seasons, and just the fact that they have dominated the zeitgeist, unlike any other television program. This is the zeitgeist. This is the presentation of entertainment in the modern world. But there's an interesting caveat introduced by the Ringer.com article. As technology continues to shape entertainment, it's becoming increasingly difficult for studios to recreate the gargantuan success of a franchise like the Game of Thrones. The internet has spawned a hyperactive attention economy that has revolutionized both the content people consume and how they consume it. As on-demand streaming platforms like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon and Apple pour their riches into the entertainment arms race, both the budgets and standard of quality for television has been raised. At the same time, viewership data and recommendation algorithms have driven studios to make shows that are far more fractured and niche. And here it goes again. Thrones is the last vestige of the monoculture, a dying and distinct model with its own advantages and blind spots. All right, so what they're saying is that, okay, over the last 50 to 60 to 70 years, a monoculture did develop in pop culture, but that's going away, and it's going away fast. We're moving more towards a fractured and niche entertainment economy, largely because of the internet and its decentralizing approach. And that's, of course, why radio programs like ours are competing with ABC, CBS, and NBC. Maybe not at quite the level that we would like, but
yeah.
But still, we are competing. Here I am.
Because we're speaking to a niche group.
We are. We have reached a niche group, and we have carved out, you know, our little 15,000 families or whatever it is that tune into this radio program, and that has taken a bit of the airtime away from NBC, CBS, and ABC and Fox News. So, friends, it turns out these monocultures come down eventually. They always do. The babbles tend to come down. Man will always want to say, come to, let us build a tower, let us build a city, let us make a name for ourselves. And God says, nuh-uh, ain't gonna happen.
It's a game of Jenga.
It's all coming down. Yeah. That's right. It's just like, you know, Francis Schaeffer used to say, man builds his towers so high they fall down. Just like your little three-year-old boy builds his little tower right in the middle of the living room, and one last little block at the very tippy-tippy top of the tower. And then what happens, Bill? Explain to us what happens.
It just crumbles.
It just comes down. That's right. So man will centralize and centralize and centralize and build towers and build empires, and they always come down because God is totally sovereign and he does not allow these systems to remain for long. Well, friends, don't be frightened. Don't be afraid. God is in control, and nobody gets to rule this world but the Lord Jesus Christ. He is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And yes, for a time, man will set themselves against the Lord and his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. We'll do that with Game of Thrones. We'll do it by Hollywood. We'll do it by the music industry. We'll do it by politics. But he that sits in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. And so we can always expect these great and powerful systems to collapse on themselves. And inevitably, we begin to see a decentralizing, what I call the Babel principle, kicks in. And we see a decentralizing of control over all of these aspects, which usually gives Christians another opportunity to disciple the nations one more time. Because we tend to operate better in decentralized modes. We tend not to be able to join the Babel system. We tend to like to operate in a decentralized approach. The kingdom of God tends to work better in the nooks and crannies, the niches, and the fractured systems, much like what we're seeing developing even now. Well, friends, that wraps up this edition of the Generations Broadcast. I'll encourage you to our little book on pop culture called The Tattooed Jesus. What would the real Jesus do with pop culture? to understand a framework by which you can discern art, movies, music, etc. Again, it's our little book on culture called The Tattoo Jesus, available at our website, kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack in studio, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.